You think you know about relationships, but you're wrong. Listen, there's no magic bullet. I'm teaching life skills.
When he's sick, you need medicine. It don't always taste good.
Nah.
But it'll get you better.
You
need this medicine.
Yeah.
It ain't gonna always taste good. But this is what you need. Men and women, bottom line, we need to have the conversation. Your partner wants to give up control, but only if you know how to drive. This is about being the best you could ever be, whoever you are. I don't care if you're a man, a woman, LGBTQ, space aliens. I'll save anybody. I don't care. I'll teach a hedgehog how to have a threesome.
What do you mean by that?
Look, you don't have to listen to me, but you're wrong.
Listen, I know I'm great. And I know you're thinking, Dante, there's no way I could be like you. But you could be me, you know why?
Because you know who I was before I was me? I was you! You
Man Score 202.
Better hear what I've got to say because you won't get it again.
I'm not an alpha male. I'm not a beta male either. I'm just a better man. Better man.
Well, put your happiness first, because if you don't, they won't.
What's up, Square Pimpin' Gang? GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, What Would Dante Do? The Sexual Revolution is being podcasted, and I am excited. This is a special show. Now, I know I've said that 500 times before, but this time I mean it. I really mean it. Harry, what's going on? You ready to rock and roll?
Oh, you know goddamn well I am. You know goddamn well I'm trying to keep these gators down, and I'm having a tough time doing it.
It's difficult.
It's not easy. It's not easy.
Pimpin' ain't easy. It gets better with practice. Dre, what's up?
What's up, pals?
Did you smoke yet? No? You didn't smoke yet?
Not yet.
All right, well, go get you a bag of weed. Go get a bag of vapor.
At this point, Dre has to just take a balloon and tie his head around it with the weed in it.
If they had come up with a weed balloon, I am in there.
You have a weed balloon. You just call a volcano.
Yeah, but I can't fit inside of it.
Oh, I see what it is. You need like a weed body bag?
That's really a problem. If that's
like
what you're concerned
in. Like a weed hamster wheel?
We got it. We got it. We already got it. We already got it. When we're all thinking you got a problem. That's what we're all thinking.
Dre is just going to show up. He's going to have a what we think is a hair dryer, just drying his hair. Like, hey, Dre, what's up? Oh, this thing.
He's going to have a gas mask.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in
the bathroom. I just love when you were murdering that intro. You killed it, by the way, right? Dre was in the spirit. He was mouthing off, just calling to the spirits of his Jamaican hip-hop ancestors. Just trying to get...
Anytime you ask Dre, something he don't know, he just starts bogling.
Like, what you say? Me never know that.
Anyway, let me introduce the guest. This dude's a really good dude. I wanted to say this. I appreciate your compliment early because I've been watching you for a while. I just sit back in the back and I was like, yo, this is a funny dude. So we knew each other, but we didn't know each other. And then we had a little thing since the COVID, had a little conversation. And I was in your publicist hit me up and was like, yo, TJ wants to get on. And I was like, yeah, like, absolutely. In fact, we talked when we saw each other about doing the show. But there was something about, I didn't want to talk to your publicist. I don't know if she told you what I said. I was like, yo, tell that nigga to give me my call. Give him my number.
They told me nothing. Like, Harry reached out to me. So it's perfect. It's done the organic way. I didn't even know they reached out to you.
I said, Harry, I wanted to have you on. Mm-hmm. But I hit your publicist up and I was like, yo, give him my number and tell him to call me. I didn't want it to be...
I hear you. Remove the middleman because we had... And the thing is, it's because we had that... Because, you know, I knew it was all respect, but we never sat down and talked.
Right.
And then we had that moment at Isville, so it feels like there's one less degree of separation. Like,
and the thing was, what's honest is I didn't want to contact you because I didn't want it to be like you hit me up and your publicist hit me up and I'm like, we usually give courtesy like that. I really wanted you to know that I wanted you on. You know what I'm saying?
I personally wanted you on.
And Harry hit you because I said, yo, let's get TJ on the show. And that's kind of how it happened. So
I was like, yeah, it's cool with me.
You didn't say nothing.
We didn't even bother.
And that's how you got on. Because I was like, yeah, he good in the hood. You can let him in.
Dre's my dude. Dre's my dude. So I
before we start, I want to say sac passé.
Naboule, baby. Naboule. Naboule.
What is that response, Naboule?
It's basically, there's no real way to translate. It's such a Haitian idiom. It's basically, we're kicking it. We're doing all right. We're doing our thing.
Like, ah-ha-ha. Like, ah-ha.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
And what's mon PPT? Is there something that says after that? Somebody, cause, I have a Haitian friend who used to say that after.
It's more of a...
Wait, what's the enunciation of it? Mon PPT?
No.
What is it?
I don't even know exactly. Like, I know what you're saying based on what it sounds like, but I don't know exactly what you're saying.
Does so what's the sense? Response? If you said sakose and I say naboule, what would you say back?
I could say naboule, or I could add a couple of things. I could say naboule negpam, which is, we're good, my dude.
Okay.
Or mon piti, that sounds like my little dude. That sort of a thing.
Okay, say.
Piti is like the French word petit, which is
how do you
small,
say it? Mon piti? So how do you say it?
Mon piti.
Mon piti. I got it. All right, cool. All right.
Ah, he was calling you a little nigga, Dante.
Which is strange. Dante's big as a motherfucker.
He was an old nigga. He was an old
hurricane. Ah, okay. He would do that. An old dude would do that. Yeah.
Yeah, he was an older dude than me. It's my little dude.
In his head, it's not even a size thing. It's an age thing.
It's an age thing. Okay, I'm good now. That's what I know.
Yeah.
I'm good. Man, it's good to have you on, bro. Good to have you on.
Thank you.
How you holding up with all this COVID shit?
I'm all right, man. Right now, I'm feeling real good because I'm in travel to North Carolina to be with some of my Haitian high school friends.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little get together. Like, I try to get out of New York every 6 months or so, but because of COVID, I couldn't do it this year. So I finally was like, you know what? I don't want to spend Christmas here doing nothing. So let me go and recharge. For me, it kind of feels like that. Whenever I'm around Haitians, like, I'm recharging my batteries.
Yeah. I feel you on that.
Okay. All right. Have you been doing shows on the roofs and shit? I mean, we did a little super spreader together a couple months ago.
I don't feel bad about that because it hasn't come back to me yet that anyone got COVID from those Isville shows. So I'm happy with that.
Okay. I'm good.
And I did a couple of rooftops and a couple of Prospect Park joints. And then it's mostly on Zoom.
Yeah. How was the Prospect Park joints?
That was actually pretty cool, man. The audience that was there, I just lucked out. I got a good crowd that wanted to hear stand-up. And like the funny thing about it is...
Did they have a PA system or was it just yelling in
there? Yeah, they brought a little generator and they brought a little PA system. So that helped out.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of those shows was like that. I feel like the audiences... especially in the parks, was just like super appreciative.
I think people was beat up. They were so beat up from not having nothing and they wanted some kind of entertainment.
There was a couple shows I did with no PA system and that shit was fun than a motherfucker.
You know, I think COVID may have made me realize that entertainment is a need.
Is essential.
It's a need. Yeah, man. Especially when you live in America where so much of your life is around work. You're just trying to chase that paper, trying to get that money. Entertainment is essential to your fucking soul,
That's
man.
That's a fact. TJ, so you,
art in general is
so, that's right.
Like, TJ, during all this,
void of no culture and people that have no art in them sucks.
You actually did a special during all this, right, Teej?
I recorded this. Well, I did. It's not a COVID special. I got lucky. I recorded the special January 3rd on 2020.
Okay.
So I got right lucky before,
right
by
before
like
things
points.
Hit. Yeah.
Exactly. So I was very lucky and I was very happy to do it.
It's dope.
At the time I did it, I self-financed it, got, you know, some money from my homies and then didn't pay rent for a couple months. I was like, fuck my landlord. My dreams matter to me more than my rent.
So pay yourself first.
That's right. That's right. So it worked out. I like the finished product. And the people at Comedy Dynamics came on board. They were like, yeah, we like this because since we did your album, so we'll distribute this for you. Mm-hmm. And I was happy with the deal. So that's what we're doing.
Cool.
So what's the name of the special and when is it coming out?
The special is called January 3rd, and it's currently out on demand on Amazon Prime Video. But we're really pushing the promotional stuff for it on January 3rd because that's the day that it's supposed to officially come out. But right now, if you want, you can rent and purchase it on Amazon Prime Video.
Why is it called January 3rd out of all things?
Because one, that's my birthday, and that's the night I happened to record it. Because I was thinking last year when it was, you know, normally I do a little get together, have a party with friends, but I thought, let me take this and use it to my advantage, because it's hard to sell out two shows as a comedian who doesn't have a name yet.
Where'd you do it at? Where'd you shoot it at?
I did it at Littlefield.
Okay.
So I said, instead of doing, you know, trying really hard to do two shows where, like, let me just do one show, and it's going to be my birthday show, which means more people would come out to support me because it's my birthday, and I'll take a risk and record that one show and see what happens.
And you were happy with it? Yeah.
I'm pretty happy with it.
The crowd was nice and juiced because it was your birthday.
The birthday helped, but you could feel it, though. Like, people are happy to be there because it's your birthday.
Yeah.
But 10 minutes in, they're like, all right, you better be fucking funny. I'm celebrating your fucking birthday, all right?
Birthday or not, nobody wants to sit through your bullshit if you
exactly. Start. You still got to go to work.
I've seen a lot of people. New York stand-up, though. Yeah. That's not all stand-up. You go to L.A., if you got juice, they'll laugh you right through your bullshit.
Yeah,
man. Dante, you ever hear the saying that L.A. is the only town where you could die from encouragement?
Yeah.
That's funny.
That's hilarious.
So disingenuous. So fucking disingenuous.
That's dope that you did that on your own, man. I really respect that a lot, that you were able to, you know, piece that together, record it, do the whole thing and self-produce. Sure. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's a mentality that I developed just because you can't wait for people to give you stuff in this business.
You're right about that.
Because you'll just die waiting.
That's true.
It's just not how it works.
So thanks for cheering us all up, though, TJ.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Hope you don't die alone.
Sorry. I didn't mean to make it.
You're right, though.
You're like, all right, do I feel like I have something good to offer? So that's the first step. Do you feel that way? Yeah, then try to make it yourself.
Does that mentality come from your upbringing, from your culture? Where does that, like, mindset come from?
Yeah, I would say so. I came here when I was already kind of an adult. I came to this country when I was 18, 19 years old. So, you know, a lot of the formative years, grew up in Haiti, different world. A lot of hardships. I saw shit that, you know, the average American kid probably didn't see. So all of that builds you up in a way where you're like, if I come here and I get a shot at doing something, I better fucking go hard because I'm lucky even just to be here.
Yeah, quick fact. The reason why Haiti's one of the poorest countries in the world is because France has been juicing them for money since they freed themselves, and they had to pay a bounty for their own freedom after they freed themselves.
Because white people suck.
Man, we could do a whole fucking series about
that. Hold on. I'm sorry. Dre tried to throw a shot at that. I want to repeat this for people who aren't aware, and you may not be aware. I am not, in fact, white. I understand that I sound like this.
All right, let's clear this up. Like this. Are you Armenian? What are you?
I am half Armenian, half Ecuadorian, which is Latino. Oh, okay. I don't do that Latinx bullshit. Just Latino. It's not. Stop it. Let's stop these rumors, man. This is holding me back in life, in the business.
But you know what? Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something.
I'll be running on board. Hey,
Harry, let me tell you something. Even if you were white, own that shit. Who gives a fuck? You're not supposed to carry the sins of your ancestors, just the way we're not carrying the sins or the whatever our ancestors went through.
We don't really have sins.
Wait, I can't hear you, Dante. You're off mic.
We don't really have sins. We were abused and oppressed. So
everybody's got sins.
But again, I just want to make that public service announcement. I am, in fact, not white. Never have been white. Don't plan on becoming white anytime soon. Thank you very much.
Man, I want white people to be proud of being white. You know,
that's for them. I don't know anything about that.
They do that. You don't need to ask for that. TJ, you don't have to ask for that ever. Yeah. There's a lot of proud white people in the world.
Lack of pride is not the problem with white people.
That is not the problem at all. Yeah.
There's a whole group called Proud Boys.
There you go. Yeah. Everybody's proud of their whiteness. Trust me. We don't have no fucking lack of that going on. And that's actually the problem. They're proud for nothing. You got mediocre white folks that are proud of being white.
You know what it is? I don't even think I think part of the problem is that white people lost their individual thing, whatever cultural background they have, and then they all embrace this bullshit white thing, which is meaningless. Like, I love an Irish that's proud to be fucking Irish. Like, you got something to hold on to. That's where your people come from. That's your culture. You got all that shit going on. But when you say you're white, it's like, what the fuck is that even?
It just means you're not black. I mean, that's really...
Yeah,
like,
that's what it is.
Really,
that's exactly what it is.
That you're white.
Yeah, that's what it is. I'm not,
pal.
Yeah.
Put her there, chief.
we talk about that all the time. How this whole the whole referendum of this whole Trump and this racial bullshit is basically because he's tricked them into thinking, well, you don't have jobs, you don't have fresh water, you don't have a home, you don't have no health care, but at least you're not black. At least you got a nigga. And they're going, you know what? You got a point there, boy. You got a goddamn point. So that's really what it is. But let me ask you this. So what part of Haiti did you grow up in? Where did you grow
up? I grew up in Gonaïves, which is a town. That's the town, by the way, where the independence was declared. So it's a town of fucking rebels. We don't fuck around.
Okay. And now, is there a remnants of feel of that in
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Really? In what sense?
There's monuments, and there's just a spirit of pride and not taking shit, which is cool. But like anything, when you take it too far, it becomes a problem.
So does it become like a machismo thing, like a Spanish machismo thing, where you can't, there's no emotion, no sensitivity, because this is, you're supposed to be, you know, that's the other end of that pride, you know?
A little bit of that, but also even beyond that, what happens is Haitians have this mentality, if we're not happy with anything, we fucking burn the shit down. So sometimes you end up hurting your
I don't really see a problem with that, but go ahead, continue.
Here's the problem.
You have to
Here's
get
the
other shit, Dante, before you burn the original shit down.
Okay. End up hurting your own cultural legacy, your own cultural wealth, because you're burning shit down that belongs to you as a people, but you're burning it down because you're mad at the people in charge, but you're also ruining your own country. Now you have nothing left.
Right. If you own it.
Haitians own the stuff in Haiti. So
right.
That's
I can see where that would be a problem.
Yeah. It's kind of too extreme. And I wish we could sit down and dial it back to understand that.
Now, let me ask you this. You grew up with both parents?
I did. I was lucky enough to have both my parents. Okay. Do they love each other still? Probably not, but they're still around and doing their thing. So
together? It's also a kind of a situation where at that age, you get married. This is what you do. This is what we
do. Right. I think like 10 or 12 years or so ago, my mom was talking about getting a divorce, and we're all like, where the fuck you gonna go? You a Christian woman. You're not gonna date some young dude. That's not gonna happen. That's not who you are.
Not gonna get her groove back?
No.
How did that influence you growing up, like your parents, influence your relationships, your dating, your sexual lifestyle, all of that?
You know what's funny? People talk a lot about how having two parents is better than having one, and on some levels I think it is, but everybody's gonna get fucked up somehow by their family. Doesn't matter if it's two people or one or three people. That's just how family works. For me, the good things about my family was they really valued education. My parents made sure you go to school. There would be books in the house, all of that stuff. Like, my dad never had money for anything, but as soon as you told him you need money for school, he would find a way to make it happen.
Right.
And I really love them for that, because that gives you a sense of, this is the power I need to have in life. I need to be like, I need to know stuff. I need to have a skill. I need to walk in a room and not feel like I'm less than because I can't talk in that room. So I really appreciate that. But then there's the other thing, which is kind of the negative side of being an immigrant, where your parents kind of want to be proud of you, but they only want to be proud of you if you do what they want you to do. That's all it is. I want to tell my neighbors I have a doctor.
Yeah.
It's like, well, do you care if I want to be a doctor? Does that matter to you? Nope.
No, not at all.
I just want my neighbors to know
that
I made
a
goddamn
doctor. Right.
So for me going into this thing, was a heartbreak, man. My mother did not speak to me for 3 months.
Really?
Yeah. To this day, my
mother.
So
what was that?
Not...
What was that conversation like?
Well, I did not even get to have the conversation with her at first, because I was saving it to be comfortable, because I knew it would be a hard conversation. But my brother went around and told her, so he kind of stole that moment from me, and she decided not to speak to me.
This is exactly what people in this country go through when they're trying to come out of the closet. That's how bad being a non-doctor is.
It's a very similar thing.
Wow.
Like, I don't know if I don't know. Now, I was know your I'm brother funny. Talking about it? Phase or what?
Was your brother talking about it? Was he trying to tell on you to kind of create friction, or was he proud of you and he talked about it, or he didn't know that there was going to be a thing, or what?
I don't think it was out of pride for me. I think I don't know if he was trying to create friction, but
is your brother a hater?
That's hard to say. Well, okay, I'll tell you.
That's hard to say, that's a yes.
Yeah. I'll tell you a story about my brother that I don't know if that makes him a hater or not, but my dad, you know, Caribbean dads, they cheat. My dad cheated, and my brother was the one who came and told my mom about it.
He's a snitch.
Damn.
Yeah, he's the one. To this day, I feel like there's a unresolved tension between him and my dad, because
I would assume
he's the
so.
One who told my mom.
Fucking
yeah.
constantly ratting your own kid, ratting on you.
Yeah.
Good thing he wasn't around when they was trying to free Haiti. That nigga would have come from the country.
So guess what they getting there to do tonight? They probably gonna do it at 3 o'clock.
Hey, man, if you live around Will Sylvans long enough, you'll pick up some sort of Haitian accent. I'll tell you what.
I grew up around Haitians a lot. And what's interesting, too, is the just immigrants and first-generation immigrants in general, they're not interested in personal fulfillment and happiness. Like, that's they're interested in survival. And education, survival, and so on and so forth. And so it's like that next generation where there's food on the table, you decide that there's more to it than just making your parents proud, and there's more to it than just doing what everybody else wants you to do. And you start this, you know, which is a really new concept.
It is.
This kind of self-fulfillment. And then I think to a certain extent, now, I mean, the younger kids today, it's too much that. You know what I mean? There's no real...
Everybody has a dream.
I agree with you 100%. It feels like the balance has been lost.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything in life is all about balance. And there's the balance of the individual versus the collective.
Right.
And immigrants are 100%. The collective. Fuck your dreams as an individual. Fuck your aspirations. We don't want none of that. Just do what you need to do so the collective could be proud.
Right.
And so now you have 100% the individual, which is also a problem.
It's always a problem with no consideration for anybody else or anything. Absolutely.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Hey, TJ, you're talking about your dad openly cheating and stuff. Like, how did that affect you and the way you approach relationships and stuff? Just having that.
Damn, I didn't know this show was going to be a therapy session. God damn, this is...
That's what it is.
That's what we do.
This is great.
It's like therapy, but openly smoking weed. That's the only problem.
I think on some level, it made me afraid of emotional connection.
Why? Well, how did you get to that?
Here's where it stopped becoming a therapy session. You never want to hear that from your therapist.
No, son, how that made you feel?
So the way it happened was, you know, when the cheating thing was happening, I was about 14, 15 years old. And there was a lot of arguing every night, and it would get loud, and my neighbors could hear it. And I'm a pretty private dude. I don't like when people know what's going on in my house. So there was a lot of shame hanging out with my friends when I could tell, did they fucking hear what my mom and dad were arguing about last night? So it was icky. It was an icky feeling. And then later in life, I finally had a conversation with my mother as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking because she nags my father a lot.
Right.
And I sat down and I'm like, I wanted to know, like, why do you always nag him so much? Like, you know, beyond the cheating, we're not even talking about that, just as a human being to human being.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
She goes, to tell you the truth, I never really loved your father.
Wow.
God damn.
Yeah.
I wish she's honest about it, but fuck.
Wow.
Right. And it's the kind of show you're like, oh, I wish I didn't know that.
And then, but what was your response to that?
I don't think I was emotionally equipped to like respond to that. Really, she told me the story.
He was only 7 years old at the time. It might have been way too soon.
That's a guy that
he was like, I'm this many years old. She was like, I never loved your father.
Yeah.
Now,
so there's a guy
Christmas
that
gift.
She was in love with, and the dude ended up leaving Haiti.
Uh-huh.
And that's the guy of her dream. She was going to marry that guy. The guy left, and now she's, you know, by herself. And, you know, part of it is at that time you had to settle down. And my dad was around, and she settled for my dad.
Right.
And I think to this day, a part of me, this is where the emotional feel of emotional connection comes in. Like,
right.
I'm always afraid of settling.
Okay. Wow, that's like, interesting. That's interesting that you looked at it from your mom's perspective and not your dad's perspective, because I would think that your aversion from intimacy could be, gosh, I wouldn't want to be somebody that asked somebody to marry them and they didn't. They only married me because I was around. And, you know, yeah. I mean, it had to be some kind of courting and stuff. I mean, I don't know your dad, but he had to.
There was definitely courting, but it just, like, I've never seen my parents kiss. I've never seen any of that.
Really?
I've never seen any outward display of affection. They just don't do that. And then I'm wondering if that's because she just couldn't bring herself to actually love him. She just has him as a husband.
Uh-huh.
But it's not someone I'm excited to be with or just do stuff with. So maybe that played in my psyche. So now I get bored very easily with people.
Yeah.
Like I'll date a girl for 3-4 months. We have a good thing. And then as soon as it's time to like maybe take it to that place, you know, like when women go, where's this going?
Right.
That's my least favorite question in the world. Like it's cool. We're chilling. Once you put that in my head, I'm almost out of the door.
When you ask that, TJ goes, I don't know where you're going, but I'm going that way. So
going to the Uber, bitch.
Yeah. Or more like, which way are you going? Because I'm going the other way. Wherever the fuck you go, you know. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, did you ever talk to your father about this or no?
No, not really.
No. And Are you close with him or no?
I want to. Yeah, we're close, but we're not. You know, some dudes are friends with their dads. I wouldn't say I'm friends with my dad. It's only growing up that I started realizing, like, my dad is a cool dude. Like, my dad is funny. He tells stories all the time. Like, you got to be funny to be cheating like that, too.
Right. He's charming. He's charming. He had to talk somebody out of some pussy, right?
Exactly. So, like, growing, you just get to see it. Because Caribbean kids, I don't know if it's immigrant kids in general, but I mean, I don't even want to speak for Caribbeans. I'd say in my family, the parents were parents.
Yep.
They weren't like people, your friends, whatever. They were your parents. That's what it is.
You know what, too? That's because...
It took me forever to learn my mama first name.
For real? God damn.
My mama name is Mama. Dad, your name is Dad. Nigga, I ain't never know their name.
Yeah. It's interesting because when you look at the generations away from, like, with African-Americans, it's sort of like generations from slavery, like from the emancipation and those generations. So like the first generation of any immigrant, they don't give a fuck about your self-fulfillment or your happiness. It's get an education, be a doctor. The next generation is usually fuck-ups because they start to be the people, like your kids are, you get people who are inequipped to kind of set those boundaries and still maintain what was good from the old stuff and still have somebody where they can be balanced enough to have some self-actualization or some kind of happiness. But I think the third generation
it just keeps getting worse. It gets further away from it. It evolves into this other thing where fundamentally truth and credibility and stuff like empathy and stuff is not everything is so social media. Like I was counseling, I do, you know, relationship counseling. I was counseling a dude, and this dude is like he's a really popular social media dude. He breaks artists with his social media marketing. And he's with some chick, and the first thing he does when they have a fight is he blocks her on the Instagram. And I'm like, you know that this is fake. Like, you take these images and put them together to present for certain people and certain clients. You know it's fake, but still, I go, why are you blocking her? He says, because I don't want to see what she's doing. But you know that's fake. Like, everybody's not on a yacht. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And if you are on a yacht, a lot of times you ain't paying your rent. You know what I mean? We got comics, grown-ass men who are on TV shows who got three roommates. You know, they live in a room and they're on TV.
Not to mention the number of people who owe you money that you see on TV that you'd never suspect owe you money.
Yeah.
Or borrow money.
I think the illusion of social media is something that our generation is going to have to... We'll need a couple of years just to get over that shit. Like what it created for us as a people, it's almost like it changed, I don't want to say human nature, but it definitely changed human behavior.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like if I'm
more fronting.
It's a better way to front. It's a digitized way to front.
Well, statistically, fronting has gone up in the last 5 years. If you look at the numbers, it's gone up 500%.
I mean, some dudes flash wads of money and talk about Frasier, and some dudes don't.
Also, play a hate.
But then you got to live with yourself. When you get off Instagram, you still got to live with yourself. To me, that's disconnect.
I think that's also why there is this over exaggeration, because the accolade you're supposed to get from that is needs to match the shit you feel inside.
So and you feel you get depressed.
Yeah.
If it doesn't
you know
match.
I was thinking about when you was talking about the people having all these shows but also being fucked with money.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of them tie that same shit with the Instagram and all that, because they're like, they get some cash and they immediately fuck it off trying to flaunt for Instagram.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They could have sustained themselves and, you know, had a normal adult.
Put it together. Right. Yeah.
They keep trying
to. You gotta be smart with the money. If you emotionally you're you know, like I always say, gratification and validation is like a saloon door. It swings both ways. So when people love you, you feel great. But as soon as everybody thinks you suck, you suck. You've given the power away to define who you are, because you're defined by the accolades of other people. And
right.
And you don't never want to give that. That's where you give that power up. So if somebody says, man, you're like, even the compliment you give me is, mm-hmm. man, you know, that's nice. I feel good I've made a difference, and you see a difference, and
mm-hmm.
you recognize that, and it's respectful, and it's also a dude who I'm digging your art too. But I gotta go through that checklist to go, is this motherfucker just stroking my ego? And
right, am I bullshitting you because I'm on your show?
Right. But I think people are like, oh, you changed my life. I'll be like, oh man, thanks, man. That was my intention. You know, go ahead, huh?
No, I was just going to ask TJ before we wrap up the show in a little bit. I want to ask all the guests if they ever got. Have you ever had a situation, TJ, where a girl really broke your heart? You know what I mean? Early on, like you got had.
Oh, for sure. I mean, if you're going to live life with an open heart, your heart is going to get broken. I love love. Mm. I love falling in love with a girl. I love that part. That shit makes you feel alive, man. You feel
but
like
only for 3 months. Only for
yeah,
3 months.
Yeah, that's it. For 3 months, I like to feel like a little boy. I get excited when I see you. I fucking love being around you. And then it dies. And the key, I'm trying to find a way to sustain it without, you know, love, the feeling of being in love is not sustainable. But love, the act of love, which is the verb, the action of committing to someone and being with them, that's work. That's that work. I want to, move from that feeling to, learning how to make
here's something that I've been thinking about a while. It's you know how comics will be about around them around each other, and they'll just, it could be a random five comics that don't even really know each other or just know kind of about each other, and they'll have that moment where we'll just be laughing and joking, and it'll be playful, and it'll be like the best night ever, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Civilians don't even understand that comics have that shit 3-4 times a week. Like, we'll have moments like that 3-4 with, so what I was, but that's that same feeling of love. It's that openness, the playfulness. And I think when you take that playfulness and that openness and let yourself be childlike, that doesn't mean take no shit from nobody. It doesn't mean don't let nobody, but in the context of a respectful manner, to play like children, because that's what we do. We verbally play like children, you know? So that helps the relationship get back to that kind of loving feeling. Do you know what I mean?
It
gets you back there, because we do it all the time. You want to, Harry, real quick, you want to stop it here and then?
No, not yet. We're still got some time, but we got like another 10 minutes before we go to the Patreon exclusive.
Okay.
We got a little bit of time. Yeah. TJ, you love being in love. Right. So I have that sort of same feeling. Like, I do love the goofy stuff that comes with love. What's the goofiest shit you ever did, like, in the name of love that you could recall? I see the smile on your face.
One time I was in love with this girl, but it hadn't moved to like a thing yet. I didn't know how she felt about me. I just knew I fucking loved her. She was Ethiopian. They have this very specific kind of beauty that I'm really into. And
it's very sharp.
And
they're mad pointy. Their face is pointy. You know what I mean?
They have a round face and a long neck. It's a very like Eastern African thing. So I'm in love with this girl, right? We had met maybe a couple weeks before. We hadn't even been on a first date yet. And we were gonna go on a first date. And she hit me up the day of the date to tell me that the night before she lost her phone and she's Facebook messaging me on her computer. And she's like, my phone is lost. I'm sorry, I have to cancel today, blah, blah. And I was like, all right, well, let me try to call and figure stuff out, see if I can help with that. I fucking called nonstop for like the next 3 hours until I found the dude. And I went and met him in Soho. She lost the phone in a cab. And that dude had the phone. Uh-huh. Like, I could be risking some shit. I don't know who the fuck that dude was. But I met with him, and he gave me the phone. And I felt like a motherfucking hero. And I hit up the girl on Facebook. We got together. I gave her the phone. But me, in my dumb young lover brain, I thought that was going to be what's
the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But we still didn't become a thing.
Watch movies, man.
Yeah.
Now, you know what's crazy? Here's a principle that I've learned throughout years is you don't build love by what you give. It's by what people give you. People fall in love with you because you ask them for things and you have them do things for you because you give them purpose in their life. Whether you realize it or not.
You got to expound on that a little bit because somebody could take that and go.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Yeah,
yo, talk bitch, about get it. Me a glass
of
water.
It's a deep way of thinking. Let's hear
go
it.
Go get me some shit. Go get my shoes. It's not going to make me fall in love with you.
Well, but the thing is this, like I had a girl who would like I'm older. So the hair in my ears start growing. And so she would like, oh my God, look at you. It's like, oh my God, you're a mess. If I don't do this, how's it ever going to get done? Like, I got to keep your ears clean. Like, and she would, like, if I shaved them myself, you could see disappointment in her because of the fact that.
You took it away from her. That became her thing to do for you. Okay, I feel you.
But it's in any way, it's if you think about. A person that you're doing things for, if you're trying to save somebody or trying to just think about how much more in love you were with her going through this process, meeting up with this guy, calling her up on Facebook, and that excitement you feel, it's like, you know, like, of course you're expecting a specific response, but the point is not getting that response even makes you want to do more. So yeah. It compounds the intensity of your crush because you're doing for her. And then because you're doing for her, it's almost like you're turning her off because you're too available.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. Because when someone loves you or likes you, they like you as you are. Like, I don't think attraction is a choice that can be moved by, like, action. Like, me getting the phone was never going to get her to like me if she didn't like me in the first place.
Well, but the thing is, you didn't like you. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're chasing something that you don't really think you're valuable enough to have. That's why you're chasing it. The intention, okay. You wouldn't chase it if it wasn't running from you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, so, absolutely.
So the only things that run from you is the things that you desire, not the thing that's running away from you because it doesn't desire you.
Yeah.
So the dynamic of that intensifies the attraction on a different level because somebody's always just out of reach. And then being out of reach kind of, so now it becomes not just the attraction that you had, the energy that you put in it, but it's also psychological about the thing. It becomes more about this thing beating me. This thing just, you know, like a mouse, your string on a cat, you just keep it out of range. And what really is happening is your energy of all that you're giving is pushing her away. So you're trying to reach and you're pushing her away and with the wind of you reaching out. So if you think
that's
about
a really good way to look at it. I agree.
If you think about how that affected you, you can also like everything had, if you flip it to the other side, is what was her response to that? Because if the shoe was on the other foot, your response would be the same. If she was overly aggressive and overly accessible, and it didn't matter whether you there, wasn't there, I want you, here's your phone, and I look what I did for you. None of that is attractive because yes. What are you really is saying is you're better than me.
And that's a pattern that I've recognized in my life, and I'm growing away from that. The pattern really is, I want a lot of people who don't want me. And then there's a bunch of people who want me and I don't give a fuck about them.
Right.
You think that's
directly connected? And it's a really unhealthy way to look to like live and try to process love and stuff.
But you know why that is? It's just a human thing. The thing that's elusive to you is always the thing that you want.
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, you may have a specific attraction or stuff, but an attraction is just a variable. It's not all the variables. You know, yeah. There's people that look, if you're getting ready to date a Victoria's Secrets model, right? The chick from Brazil, and she ends up sucking your dad's dick, it doesn't matter how pretty she is, you know, because it's not conditional. You know what I mean? She yeah. looks really ugly if she's blowing your dad, if you know that right. she blew your right. dad. And yeah. so they're all variables, looks, intelligence, all of that is variables, but it's variables. There's some of the variables. Me and Harry had talked about that all the time. Like, Harry was always worried about his weight. Now, Harry lost 50 pounds already, so... And he's,
congrats, man. Yeah. That's dope.
He's dropping thank like you. Crazy, but the but point was...
But I was doing fine before the 50. I learned all my stuff even before the weight, and it wasn't the weight that... It made life easier. What'd you say, Andre?
So you was out here getting them bitches before the 50.
Absolutely.
That's true.
But anytime there was an obstacle that he couldn't breach.
Yeah, I'd focus on that.
He would,
lean on
that. It was my weight.
Yeah.
You know, everything was my weight. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but it's.
And that was some of it, but that wasn't all of the problems I had. It wasn't all of it.
Like, it is a variable, but the point was the fact that when you meet a woman, she doesn't know you.
Yes.
How old are you, TJ?
I'm going to be 32 in just a few weeks. Yeah.
So you know you for 32 years. This mm-hmm. woman meets you in a minuscule of time of that, right? And then, so how does she know who you are? You got to tell her.
Right.
you tell her with your posture, your tone of voice, the cadence of your voice, how you say, your gestures, what comes out of your mouth, what doesn't come out of your mouth, your looks, all of those things are the things you're telling her who you are. Mm-hmm. But if you're insecure about a particular thing of yourself, then you tell her, this, I'm not good at this. Whether or not you say it outright, you're always hiding that.
Yeah,
and that hidingness becomes almost deceptive, and deceptive reads as unsafe, and unsafe reads as unattractive. So it happens in these really quick ways where it runs from one thought to the next. But the minute you start, when you present yourself and understand what your value is,
mm-hmm.
you're basically telling, yo, I'm a bad motherfucker.
Yeah.
And she's going to assess that in its entirety and go, yeah, I'm attractive. I'm attracted to you. Not even if you're not physically what she wants, because we always bring back the Victoria's Secret model sucking your dad's dick, right?
So why do we always bring that up, Dante? That seems very specific that we...
I usually don't say it about TJ's dad, but he cheats. Yeah. So I figured it was good enough.
It's highly plausible.
Yeah. Is that a story that happened to someone and we just use it as an example? Whose father has got his dick sucked by, you know, who that happened to?
Well, the explanation to me comes from the depths of my own fear. It's like that would be the worst thing in the world, that if I was dating a chick and then she just was like blowing my dad.
That's interesting. Why is that? That says a lot about you. On
absolutely. Like,
his like, dad
why not your best
guy.
Friend? Why not your best friend, but your dad? Why is your dad your ultimate rival?
His dad, his best friends didn't have any shit as far as game, but his dad had game. That's why.
And my father was my ultimate rival.
Yeah.
And
his father would do anything to win that battle.
And he went and down swinging.
He did, right? Didn't he? He did a little fucking Oklahoma grab ass on his way out.
My first wife stopped coming around because my father used to touch her on rub her shoulders and stuff like
Holy
that.
Holy shit!
But I knew. But it's funny when she told me that, I said to my wife, like, why wouldn't you tell me that? And she goes, I didn't think you would believe it. And then I thought about it, and I called all of the ex girlfriends that I had. And every last one of them said that my pops had kind of cracked, that if they were around at any period of time. So he was always that, always trying to, the competition, you know. But my pops was 5'2". He was the youngest boy of 16, right? His, you know, he grew up during Jim Crow. He had rickets. Like, I mean,
you're getting low on the list of excuses for grabbing ass. I have arthritis. What do you expect me to do?
And he was
a pirate, nigga.
You a lime, motherfucker.
He would have been a limey if he was a pirate. So he was always that. Because he had that Napoleon complex and he wanted to always be. So he was always. He was always driven by audiences. Anytime somebody was watching, and don't get me wrong, he would do extraordinary things during the audiences, mm-hmm. You know. But if there was no audience, he would keep it moving. Like even to the point, I think, like if there was a house on fire and there was a baby screaming if there was no audience, I believe he would. Keep it moving,
bro. If your
out of
dad
fear.
Had an iPhone, he would be the type of nigga to turn on live before he do something.
Yeah,
yeah. He, sounds like your dad would be an influencer if he was today. He would be killing.
Well, he was. They've named a street after him.
Oh wow, cool.
Yeah, he's named a street and a park. But the thing
how'd you get along with him?
We had a really was rough. It was rough. Okay. Because I thank God for. The things that he taught me in terms of like to keep your word, that your word is your bond, and to tell the truth and don't be a liar and you know don't be a coward. He would, even though he put a lot of fear into me, he was a representation of a really strong man who provided for his family, and those basic fundamental rules like truth and credibility,
right,
those things were instilled in me. But he violated a lot of them. And I became a situation where I was his police on. I was, yo, didn't you say da 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 da? And then it became.
He would call him out on his own bullshit with wisdom that he gave me.
Right. And then he would go, you know what? I can go hang out at the park with these kids that ain't got no father. And they'll love me. I don't have to deal with this.
I can find some fake kids. Fuck you. I don't need it.
And that's what he did. I mean, hundreds of thousands of fake kids. Like that's what he did. Youth work. He did tournaments and youth work and all kinds of nonprofit. And
that must be hurtful for a real son to watch your father do.
Yeah, it was hurtful. But you know, you got to get to the point where, like I think about my dad grew up in Jim Crow, during Jim Crow. Like, you know what I'm saying? We're talking about we talking about this Black Lives Matter shit. That shit back there, that's before Emmett Till. So you tell me what the fuck, blackface, nigga, whatever, all of that was. So in the context of that, how could I possibly expect him to have a handle on his self-actualization, what he was or what he was, where he was really just he was affected by being a small man in stature, and so his personality was so big I believed the hype, and then I was like, yeah, you told me such and such and such, because that's credibility, right? That's what he taught me. So I couldn't do any different.
Yeah, it's kind of that thing of never meeting your heroes in some way. Your dad was your hero, and then you got to see him for who he really is.
Yeah, and for the flaws and stuff. But you forgive, and I think I always say that I'm the best of him, and I left the worst of him.
Beautiful.
You know,
the work is done.
You know, I don't give a fuck. Like, I really don't give a fuck with nobody. I don't care if there's an audience, if it's not an audience. I stay true to that. Maybe sometimes I overdo that. And I think as I'm older, that's balancing more. But
also, what were your last words when you were there with him at the empty hospital room? if I could recall that memory.
I told him I had to go identify the body. And I went in the room. He was sitting there. He was like dead in his arms. And I was like, who won now, nigga? I won. Bang.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It was weird because it was right next to the nurse, too. He wasn't even alone. That was the weird part. They had a bunch of doctors in there.
And I spiked his bedpan. So,
he started doing the icky fucking shoes with that one.
He started doing the icky shuffle. It was really uncomfortable.
That's crazy.
It was terrible.
Wild. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was gonna wrap up with that for the regular show. We're gonna continue over at Patreon with a little bit more with TJ and maybe some more awful dad stories from Dante and myself and Andre as well. But thank you to everyone for joining the show. Again, if you want to join us over at Patreon, you could join us at patreon.com/manschool202 and also check out this episode and all the episodes on YouTube, if you want to see the visuals, and you want to see what latest background Andre has decided to put up. This one is very poetic. It's him smoking weed. Very creative, original.
Offering,
I never thought it.
Offering,
you know what?
You don't see that a lot.
You don't see that a lot.
He's a giver, that one.
I'm a giver. Good guy.
But it's in black and white, so he's not a drug addict. It's classy. See, that's the difference. That's
it's avant-garde. Yeah. Dre, go ahead. Talk your shit.
Andre D. Thompson on all things between spots. Type Andre D. Thompson in your search engine. That should work.
TJ, please plug the album, everything, and the social media.
You can find me on everything pretty much at TJ Stand Up on Twitter and Instagram. That's what I use the most. And my special, January 3rd, is currently available on Prime Video and Apple TV. You can rent and purchase it and enjoy it. It's a good show. I'm real proud to share it with y'all, and I hope you watch it.
And also, before we forget, please join us over at Instagram, RealManSchool202, at RealManSchool202. We're doing a bunch of clips. We're supposed to be doing some live stuff soon. And, you know, whatever happens, that's where it will be. So.
Beautiful.
Okay. Let me.
GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The sexual revolution is being podcasted. I love y'all. If you need the one-on-one consultations, DanteNero.com. If not, just Google me. You know how to get me. I love y'all. We are out. Man School 202 is created by Dante Nero.
hosted by Dante Nero with Harry Turjanian and Andre D. Thompson. Produced by Harry Turjanian. Executive producers Matt Kleinschmidt, Harry Turjanian, and Dante Nero.